All right, we are back. I'm Janine. This is KUCI 88.9 FM, and my show is Get the Funk Out. So standing by, second half of the show is Orrin Harmon, and he has a new book out, which unlocks the mystery of metamorphosis, a natural and human history. Caught my eye. It's a beautiful book. The cover is filled with butterflies and caterpillars, and it's all the details, including the cover of the book and about Orrin, are right now on the show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org, and he's standing by with us right now. Hi, Orrin. How are you?
Very well. How are you?
Good. I was going to say good morning, but you were calling in from Jerusalem, so I know you said it's about 7:32 at the moment. Thank you for taking the time.
Yes. Good morning to you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. So how does it feel to have your book out in the world?
It feels great. This was a book that took a while. I've had most of my experiences with publishing books have been that I read a lot and I think a lot. And if I have to do work in the lab, I do work in the lab. And then I sort of figure out the book and I write it. But in this case, it was just really difficult. It's a book about change, which is really about everything in some sense. And I wrote it 3 times, and each time I threw it in the trash until I felt like it was the book that I wanted.
Oh, my goodness. 3 times.
Yeah.
Now, before we dive into the book, Orrin, could you please share with listeners what you do in Jerusalem? Because I know you teach at a graduate level.
Yes. I teach in a science, technology, and society program at Bar-Ilan University, and I'm also a senior research fellow at the Van Leer Institute in Jerusalem. I teach evolutionary theory and history and philosophy of science and writing.
Fascinating.
And at the Van Leer, I run a program that is meant for children and creation on science across media for the kids in Israel.
Beautiful. I have to say that I have milkweed plants, and they attract the butterflies, and the caterpillars grow, and that's as far, much as I know. But your book was so fascinating. What drew you to this idea?
Well, to be honest, it was nightly dreams that I was having after found out that my wife and I were going to have our third kid. She emerged from the shower one evening with a little, plastic stick with two pink lines on it. Mm-hmm. And I immediately started having these recurring dreams of my childhood dry aquarium where I would rear butterflies. And, wake up in the middle of the night with a flashlight on my forehead trying to see a butterfly emerge from a chrysalis. And I had this recurring dream of the blue butterfly emerging from the chrysalis. And I had it night after night after night. And then I started saying to myself, okay, someone's trying to tell me something.
That's right.
There must be a connection between this impending birth of our third child and pregnancies, human pregnancies in general, and metamorphosis. And so I jumped in to try to investigate that connection.
I love that. Maybe you should write a children's book, too.
I actually am writing a children's book.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
A whole children's series about metamorphosing creatures we have.
Oh, I love it.
Alex Axolotl and Francis Frog and Betty the Butterfly and Stella the Sea Squirt. There are going to be 8 of them.
Oh, my goodness. So you're going to have to call back in with that one, too. When is that going to be released?
The moment we find an English language publisher.
Okay.
I've written a few of them, and they just went to Bologna to the big children's fair, and they were presented there to the many publishers, and Once we sign it, it'll exist in English.
That's so great. I love that. So could you talk about how, the process of metamorphosis for those who are not really familiar?
Sure. Well, I think that we're all transfixed by creatures that appear in one guise and then transform almost overnight into something completely different. And it's kind of the closest thing to natural magic that we know. Most people, when they think about metamorphosis, they think about caterpillars and butterflies and about tadpoles and frogs.
Mm-hmm.
These are kind of idiosyncratic quaint thoughts that are often related to childhood memories. But the thing about biological metamorphosis is that it's both idiosyncratic and almost universal. So we believe that 3/4 of all animal species on planet Earth undergo some form of metamorphosis, which is really remarkable. And most of these instances are completely unknown to most people. So I'll just give one example to kind of blow the mind.
Okay.
The kinds of metamorphoses and morphs that we see in nature are really incredible. So take the starfish, for example. The starfish starts out life like every creature as an egg, and then it becomes a young larva. And the larva sort of looks like a flapping angel. It's a translucent, wow, flapping angel that has a body symmetry like you and me, so mm-hmm. up and down, left and right, top, bottom. And then at a certain point in this creature's life, this is a swimming creature, swims in the midwaters. At a certain point in its life, a second developmental program kicks in its tummy and begins to create the adult, which looks like a starfish. So
okay.
It's pigmented, and it has often 5 arms and has a radial symmetry. And this tiny adult then migrates to the tips of the larva. And in this kind of magical moment, almost like an immaculate conception, they sort of kiss and they separate, and the adult falls down to the seabed, and the juvenile continues flapping its wings in the midwaters. Now, what is the relationship between these two creatures? If I show them to you on my hand, you have no chance of guessing that they have anything to do with one another.
Probably
and indeed,
not.
When they separate, they have no interest in one another.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the relationship? Is the larva the parent of the adult? No. Are they siblings? No. Are they cousins? No.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually an identity, meaning that every cell in the body of these two completely different-looking species has the exact same genome, the same gene.
Interesting.
So from a human perspective, we just don't have the words in our human language to kind of describe this relationship. It would almost be like a teenager giving birth to its own adult self and then living simultaneously next to its adult self.
Whoa.
Which is, I mean, think about that. That's pretty crazy.
Yes, it is. Oof.
And that's just one example out of millions. So what metamorphosis is it's dramatic post-embryonic development. So
wait, back up. Dramatic post-embryonic development.
Right.
That
so
we said?
After
okay.
birth,
yes.
Once you're born, something in your development has to be very, very dramatic to change you physically into something that looks different from what you were before.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell from that definition, it's kind of fuzzy because, wait a second, how dramatic does dramatic have to be to count as metamorphic? And then, you know, number two, who gets to decide how dramatic has to be?
Yes.
So are we humans metamorphic? That's one of the questions that I deal with in the book.
I would think so, because there's not only biological transformation, but psychological.
Yes, I think that's true. And that we humans, I mean, compared to a butterfly
mm-hmm.
or, you know, a starfish, we may not change physically as dramatically as those creatures do, although we do change, of course, very dramatically. But most of the change in our lives is really internal.
Mm-hmm.
Still, we appeal to biology to kind of explain ourselves to ourselves. So I'll give you a famous example, an example that went to the Supreme Court in the U.S. Evan Miller was a 14-year-old who sadly murdered his neighbor in a trailer park in Alabama. And he was found guilty of the murder and was given life without parole by an Alabama court. His lawyers took the case to the Supreme Court of the United States. And based on amicus curiae that were presented before the justices, to the effect that the brains of adolescents were simply different. They were too different from adult brains to be judged by the same rules, because the pruning of the nerve cells hasn't happened. They haven't been what's called myelinated yet. It's sort of like a Ferrari. Adolescents are like a Ferrari without a brake. They don't have as much control over their impulses. So the highest court in the land decided that you can't give, in the United States, you cannot give life without parole to a juvenile who has murdered someone. And that was based on the biological differences.
Well, isn't it the frontal lobe cortex is not fully developed until a certain age?
Sorry, I didn't hear you.
Isn't it? I thought it was the frontal lobe cortex. Is that what it's called? Is not fully developed?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But I'll tell you something interesting about that frontal lobe.
Mm-hmm.
When we are fetuses in our mommy's wombs, a hormone called thyroxine courses across the placenta into our developing brains. Okay. And it determines in our prefrontal cortex, in that lobe that you're talking about,
yes,
the relative number of nerve cells versus connective cells, which in a way you could say the prefrontal lobe is in many ways what makes us human. It's what's responsible for our creativity and our imagination and our higher thinking. So that same thyroxine molecule, which kind of turns us into, plays an important role in turning us into humans and who we are, is the same molecule that in an ancient lamprey, which is 360 million years old, clicked on metamorphosis. So we don't call ourselves formally metamorphic. We are not metamorphic creatures according to the definition, which is maybe why, we've invented the Transformers and Superman and Batman. We sort of need those heroes.
Sure.
But when you look at the underlying biology, it's all on a continuum. We are part of nature. We're not apart from nature in any way.
So interesting. Really fascinating. Do you think there are parallels between metamorphosis and certain times of crisis or transition in human life?
Sorry, between?
Yes. Yes.
Between
metamorphosis?
Parallels between what?
Do you think there are parallels between metamorphosis and certain times of crisis or transition in human life?
Yes. I think that, metamorphosis, change in general sort of marks endings. But it also marks beginnings and also continuations.
Sure.
And we're very ambivalent about change, we humans. We look in the mirror and we sort of ask ourselves, am I the same person as I was yesterday or 5 years ago or 15 or, 30 years ago? While at the same time, exalting the wrinkles that bring wisdom with them. We see the flower on the tree, and we celebrate that, but we bemoan the rotting fruit. And of course, the fruit and the flower are connected to one another. You can't have one without the other.
Sure.
So we're very ambivalent about change, but I would say that really, when I try to think about in my own life and the lives of the people that I care about and that I observe, the things that really bring about change more than anything else are the ones that are the moments when someone that we love departs from us.
Oh, sure.
And then also when we bring life to the world.
Mm.
These seem to be sort of great moments of metamorphosis.
Yes.
In particular, bringing life to the world for the first time, but then you feel it successively with every other child, is kind of like a Copernican revolution. It's sort of, you are moved aside as the center of your own universe in favor of a little cuddly, delicious little baby.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great change in life and also a wonderful blessing.
That's beautiful. So, Oren, I have to ask, how have you changed since having that third child?
You'll have to ask my wife and maybe my kids. But if I had to self-report, I would say that I've become softer.
Mm-hmm.
you know, maybe less judgmental, more open to difference, more able to live with difference, and at the same time also in some sense like more focused on what is important.
Oh yes.
You know, time suddenly, you know, with age becomes more valuable, more precious.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps to focus the mind on what you really want to, what is most important to you.
Sure.
And with the third kid, I mean, it was clear from the first kid, but all the more so, I've learned that there's nothing more important in life than family.
Beautiful.
Loved ones. Those are the real marks that we are given the opportunity to leave.
Yes.
In our short span of time here on Earth.
Yes, that's beautiful. I feel that having children really changes our perspective, our priorities, and
for sure.
And we can become better people as a result in being open to those changes.
Yes. Amen.
Yeah. What else would you like listeners to know about your book?
Well, besides wonderful creatures like the starfish and also the sea squirt, which kind of starts life as a tadpole swimming with a tail, and a notochord like us, it's a chordate. It's basically on its way to being a vertebrate and then turns downward and sort of eats itself up and becomes a very simple marine invertebrate, so kind of reverse evolution. And, you know, the eel and the mayfly, which only lives for one day, and when it emerges from its last metamorphosis, it loses its mouth, so it can't ingest anything. It has to live on, you know, the few energy resources that it has, and in that time to find a mate, and it's sort of the males shoot upwards like these NASA rockets, and then they fall down like falling leaves, and this is very attractive to the female, and the mating happens in midair before the males kind of fall down dead on the banks of the water, and the females have one last task, which is to reach the waters again, and these little slits in their abdomens open up to allow the fertilized eggs to fall down once more in the water column to start the cycle anew. So there's a lot of there are many wondrous creatures that are presented in this book, including the immortal jellyfish, which never dies. I'll
yes.
just leave it at that and hope I piqued your imagination and your curiosity. But alongside the natural creatures, the book also tells the story of some wonderful people. Going back to the times of the ancient Greeks and Aristotle, who set their sights and their hopes and their fears on metamorphosis, on this kind of magical natural process, and tried to figure out what it was. One of the ladies, one of the amazing scientists, female scientists that I look at, is a woman by the name of Maria Sibylla Merian, who was born in the 17th century in Frankfurt, was a painter, born to a family of painters, who in the mode of the day painted flowers. This is around the time of the great tulip craze.
Mm-hmm.
And she, you know, like Rembrandt, she painted flowers. And if you ever look at those beautiful sort of Dutch and German classics from that period, you'll see that there are a lot of insects kind of strewn on the flowers. Those were embellishments. They had nothing to do with the actual flowers. They had nothing to do with their ecology. But what Maria figured out was that she was actually drawn much more strongly to the insects than she was to the flowers.
Interesting.
And so she became a butterfly rearer in her attic in the milk market in Nuremberg.
Oh.
And then at the age of 52, in the year 1699, traveled to Suriname on a boat. It had just been traded for Manhattan in the worst real estate deal ever made in the history of real estate by the Dutch,
okay,
in order to figure out the life cycle of exotic butterflies and moths in Suriname. So she's one of the characters that you'll encounter there, too. Wonderful woman.
So fascinating. How do you feel that you've been changed by this book as far as your process for writing this book? What was that like?
Well, it was really hard. It was really hard to figure out how to write both about the biological mystery of why does metamorphosis even exist? Because, I mean, why do creatures have to go through so much destruction in order to become who they are? That's kind of it's a Darwinian question, because it's really expensive to kind of disband and then create yourself anew.
Sure.
So why does that happen? But alongside that, there was also our preoccupation in culture, in art and in literature and in music and theater. There's a chapter about G.M. Barry and Peter Pan, who's basically has a natural counterpart, the Mexican axolotl, which never grows old, never goes through its final metamorphosis. Mm-hmm. So to tell both the history of the scientific attempts to figure out what metamorphosis is and why it exists, alongside with the cultural preoccupation with the themes emanating from metamorphosis, the themes of, you know, the meaning of the life cycle and the meaning of radical change. So all these things, they changed me in ways that I'm still processing, I would say. But I think that there's something about, you know, studying the life cycle that allows for kind of acceptance of the way of things, the way things go, you know, the cyclicality,
sure.
The return to origins. There's something about metamorphosis, which in a way, as the poet Rumi in the 13th century, the great Sufi poet from Persia, wrote, all our transformations in life are in some ways a return to self.
Mm.
We're returning to ourselves and discovering deeper facets of ourselves. And I think that writing this book has contributed to my ability to do that.
Sure. And I love how we started this conversation, that this was all based on a dream and you paid attention to that dream. And I feel it's really important at different moments in our lives. So for me lately, I've been practicing yoga and peeling back my layers and paying attention to things. And it's important, because we go through all these transitions and life can be a roller coaster ride of ups and downs. So when you get to pay attention to those things, it's your subconscious, you never know where that's going to lead you.
Yes, and we all tell ourselves stories. You know, we're a storytelling creature. People are divided. There's a wonderful kind of psychological study that shows that people are divided into narrative people and episodic people. And it's kind of a pretty robust distinction. So people who are narrative, they kind of narrate their lives to themselves and to others. They say, I was born in Jerusalem, and then I went to study at Oxford. That's where I met my wife, and I moved back, and I had children. That's how they sort of narrate their lives. Whereas episodic people don't really tell a story. They kind of live in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to tell a kind of narrative biography for oneself, it doesn't really have all that much salience for them. But what's amazing is that, you know, being storytelling creatures, we even when the story that we're telling ourselves is that we don't have a story, that is a story.
That's a story. Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And you can be inconsistent in very consistent ways in your life if that inconsistency provides meaning to you.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, I mean, we're always changing. Change is just a fact of life. It's something that one cannot escape, and one, you know, shouldn't want to escape. One should embrace it, you know, as much as you can. But the ways we deal with it differ from people to, you know, from person to person and from culture to culture. change is the lifeblood of life.
Yes, that's beautiful. And I will add to that that it's important that we share our stories, because how we are inspired and how we travel through our lifetime, and if we share those stories of change and inspiration and resilience, you never know who you're going to inspire.
That's right. That's right.
So we have to wrap up, Oren, but I have really enjoyed this. Where can people find out more about you and your work?
I have a website. It's orenharman.com.
Okay.
It's as simple as that, O-R-E-N-H-A-R-M-A-N.com. And the book, Metamorphosis, A Natural and Human History, is available on Amazon and wherever books are sold.
And I put up your wonderful reviews on my show blog, which is getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. Thank you so much for calling in. I've really enjoyed this. Congratulations on your book.
So have I. Thank you so much. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
I'll be in touch. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. If you missed any part of my conversation with Oren Harman, it will be up as a podcast within an hour after I wrap. His new book is out now, Metamorphosis, A Natural and Human History, by Oren Harman. And again, you can find out more about Oren by visiting his website. It's orenharman.com. That's a wrap for me. I'm Janine. You've been listening to Get the Funk Out. I'll be back next week. In the meantime, if you have checked out our website in a while, kuci.org, you will be really interested in all the great events we have going on and different shows. I've actually been writing some reviews for shows that have been at the Secrets Room, from The Notebook to The Wiz, and I'm off to Spamalot, so stay tuned for that. And so, up next, Pass Forward with SoCal New Waver. Stand by for that at the top of the hour. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.